From feature story news in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's program, President Obama defends a healthcare.gov website as White House officials report stronger sign-up numbers.
The bottom line is, this law is working and will work into the future.
We hear Europe's reaction to the ongoing pro-Western protests in Ukraine. A survey listing the world's most corrupt nations is released. We'll tell you which country tops the list and the surprising US ranking. And we head to Jamaica to mark the life and work of the late reggae artist Junior Mervin.
Police and Thieves was a kind of a departure, even though the song didn't have that rebellious tone like a Mali or a Culture or things like that. It was pretty, you know, easy on the ears. It could be played on radio without offending anybody.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after a summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. U.S. President Barack Obama has launched a new public relations campaign to promote the benefits of his signature health care reform. It comes 2 months after the troubled launch of the website, which is designed to help people sign on for affordable insurance. Daniel Wrenches reports.
The dysfunction of the website healthcare.gov, which directs people and businesses to various insurance exchanges, has provided Republicans with numerous opportunities to criticize the Affordable Care Act. President Obama's launching a public relations fight back with the opening message that despite initial teething troubles, the website is now operational.
And we know the demand is there, and we know that the product on these marketplaces is good.
Over the coming weeks, the White House hopes to demonstrate that the healthcare marketplaces will provide the 41 million uninsured and the underinsured with a sense of certainty that they'll receive adequate medical care if they sign up to receive coverage, which starts in the new year.
South Korea has had a power shakeup as Kim Jong-un's uncle, Jang Song-taek, has been stripped of his position in the government. He was known to be an influential mentor to Kim Jong-un. His removal comes after two of his deputies were executed in November on corruption and anti-party activities. A U.S. judge ruled Tuesday that the city of Detroit is insolvent and eligible for federal bankruptcy protection. The ruling means the home of America's automotive industry is now the largest U.S. city to go bankrupt. Quinn Bowman has more.
The landmark ruling paves the way for a lengthy process, one in which Detroit will try to unwind more than $18 billion U.S. dollars in debt. Bondholders, retirees, and other creditors are in line to be paid by the city. Detroit asked for protection this summer after years of population loss left it without enough tax revenue to operate. Judge Stephen Rhodes also ruled that cuts to pensions for city retirees could be part of any reduction in city expenses. Emergency manager Kevin Orr will now propose a plan to restructure the debt due by the end of the month.
Tensions have eased in the Thai capital Bangkok after police dismantled barriers, which have been holding back anti-government protesters. There were concerns about the prospect of future violence following clashes which left a number of people dead. Bangkok-based correspondent Andrew Drummond says there's no guarantee that the relative peace will hold.
Police gave way today and let the demonstrators get access to the police headquarters. The police pulled down their own barricades. But I think the lull here is only temporary. The problem's not been solved. The anti-government protesters obviously still want the government to go, but they haven't actually forced them to go yet.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has expressed Washington's deepening concern over China's new air defense zone, accusing Beijing of raising regional tensions. Speaking alongside Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, Mr. Biden said China's unilateral move also increases the risk of miscalculation. Nina Maria Potts reports.
Vice President Joe Biden was speaking in Tokyo and said the U.S. is consulting its allies, Japan, South Korea, and others in the region, signaling the U.S. wants to reduce tensions. Mr. Biden's remarks came as Japan called on the U.S. to come down more strongly on its side in a territorial dispute over a contested group of islands both countries claim as theirs. China's unilateral move to create a new air defense zone above those islands has enraged Japan, worried China is actually trying to take the islands once and for all. The zone covers more than 600 600 miles, that's some 965 kilometers from north to south, above international waters between China, South Korea, Japan and Taiwan. China says all aircraft entering the zone must file flight plans or face defensive military action. But the US and Japan are not adhering to those rules.
The United Nations has announced it will use unarmed drones to monitor the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This means that for the first time, the UN will have aerial surveillance to help its peacekeeping mission as it continues to assess rebel groups. And 15-year-old students in the U.S. lag behind their peers in many other developed countries, according to new rankings released this Tuesday. American teens are below the international average in mathematics and roughly around the average in science and reading, compared to dozens of other countries participating in the 2012 Program for International Student Assessment. East Asian countries dominated the results, with students in Shanghai coming out on top. And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
The bottom line is, this law is working and will work into the future. People want the financial stability of health insurance, and we're going to keep on working to fix whatever problems come up.
President Barack Obama earlier today once again defending his health care reform law. After a heavy and sustained political attack over the troubled rollout of the health care website, the Obama administration is trying to shift focus on the positive aspects of the law. Earlier, I spoke to White House correspondent Linda Feldman from the Christian Science Monitor and began by asking her if the website relaunch had been a success.
Yes, they did reasonably well. It wasn't perfect. They said they had reached their goal of being able to accommodate 50,000 users simultaneously, and apparently it slowed down at about 35,000 users, but it didn't crash. I think the big fear was that there would be yet another crash upon takeoff, and that didn't happen. So I suppose doing better than crashing is a success.
President Obama, I mean, he's going to defend his healthcare reform law, but what form do you think this defense is going to take over the coming weeks and months?
Well, they're planning on hitting this theme every day. What they're doing essentially is re-educating the public about what's in the law and reminding people in particular about all the popular features. For example, tomorrow the focus will be on how Americans are paying less for preventive care. On Thursday, they're going to remind us that people with pre-existing conditions can no longer be charged more or excluded from coverage. On Friday, they're going to talk about how the how healthcare inflation has declined. So it's going to be kind of a daily dose of good news about what Obamacare, what the ACA does for people.
And will part of this defense be an attack aimed at the Republican Party?
For sure. President Obama never wastes an opportunity to slam the Republicans because they've been going after him so hard. He's going to talk about how the Republicans want to basically take away all the positive things that he and the Democrats have given them, that they want to, for example, kick kids off their family health care plans. Right now, adult children up to the age of 26 can be on their parents' plan. That would end if the ACA was overturned.
It's no secret that the president's approval ratings are tanking, chiefly down to the health care website fiasco. But is it fatal? Or he's got 3 years left in office. Is that enough time to pull it back?
Well, there is time, and I was actually looking at this question yesterday over presidents who suffer a very serious blow to their credibility and to sort of public opinion about their incompetence and even their likability. One example is George W. Bush, who tanked in his second term over the Iraq War and then, of course, over Hurricane Katrina, and he never recovered. President Reagan took a serious blow with the Iran-Contra scandal, and he did recover. I think underlying all of this is the issue of the economy. It really comes back to the old adage from James Carville, it's the economy, stupid. If the economy continues to improve and people are feeling better about their lives, including their health care, then I think Obama can improve. But if there are continuing problems, not with just the website, but with the overall scheme of Obamacare, and the economy just kind of limps along, but you still have high unemployment, then I'm not sure that he can recover.
Linda Feldman from the Christian Science Monitor. This is FSN Reports. The Ukrainian parliament has rejected a motion put forward to force the government from power. The proposal was rejected during ongoing mass demonstrations in the capital, Kiev. The demonstrations are in reaction to the country's president, Viktor Yanukovych's refusal to support a deal for stronger EU ties. Earlier, I spoke to FSN's Europe correspondent, Sandra Gatman.
So today's big story was that opposition leaders in Ukraine have been trying to push for the resignation of the Ukrainian government today, and they failed. They had tabled a vote of no confidence, which didn't get the support that they wanted. But the situation outside the parliamentary building, of course, is quite a different picture. It's one of mass anti-government frustration over Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych turning his back to the European Union, as they see it. The protests in Kiev were sparked, of course, by the president's decision last week not to sign what's known as an association agreement with the EU, and that's a form of political alliance with Brussels and all the values that the European Union represents and promotes: freedom and democracy, as well as economic transparency and increased trade ties as well in the not-too-distant future. So many strands of the story still bubbling away. There's, of course, been recent heated protests and violence on the streets of Kiev, and the government is under heavy criticism at the moment for police reaction to those protests, which many see have seen as quite peaceful. A spokesman for the White House has spoken out against violence by Ukrainian police as well recently, and disregarded comments coming from the Ukrainian government saying that there was an act of conspiracy at work as well to topple the parliament.
Large-scale protests, vast numbers, you know, in the tens of thousands in Ukraine, clearly taking a pro-Western stance, very unhappy about the fact that this trade pact has fallen away thanks to Yanukovych and his decision on the deal. But how is this playing out in Europe?
Well, the EU here in Brussels has been very, very vocal about berating Russia's actions. They don't think that Russia has a veto in these matters, and they feel Moscow has stuck its nose in too far. But Brussels has also sent a very encouraging message about the door still being open to Kiev and the prospect of one day signing this deal with the EU at a later opportunity. And many have set a date for March, when the EU-Ukraine summit is going to happen in Kiev, as a potential date for the signing and reconsideration by President Yanukovych to finally side with the EU on this. We know more recently that yesterday the European Commission's president, José Manuel Barroso, was on the phone to the Ukrainian government. Perhaps sometime next week a delegation will be coming to Brussels, and they're going to open this can of worms again. They're going to talk about the association agreement, among other things. So it's safe to say the EU is really trying to remain engaged. And as a positive sign, there is willingness from the Ukraine as well to remain engaged and continue these political discussions, despite what many saw was a huge snub to the EU last week.
Sandra Gatman in Brussels. Now, the House of Representatives is scheduled to work just 9 days in the next 5 weeks before starting a new term on January 7th. In that time, they're rushing to finish a budget, a farm bill, a defence bill and a slew of other must-pass legislation. With several high-profile activists on a hunger strike in Washington, D.C. and across the country, pressure is also mounting for Congress to address immigration reform. Some members of the so-called Fast for Families have gone without food for nearly a month, and today passed the baton to a new group of fasting protesters, including a sitting member of Congress. On Capitol Hill, Alice Olstein reports.
In a large white tent set up at the base of Capitol Hill, a group of activists who have been fasting since November 12th for comprehensive immigration reform passed on the hunger strike to a new group, which includes young African-American activists from Florida, a Korean-American Methodist pastor from Utah, and Joe Kennedy III, who represents Massachusetts in Congress.
We have always relied on those who are fearless enough to challenge us to be that better country that we can be.
More than a dozen other members of Congress attended Tuesday's vigil, including Georgia Democrat and longtime civil rights advocate John Lewis, who said the Fast for Families call for immigration reform moved him to tears.
To me, it is so strange and disgraceful, shameful, that in the Congress we don't have the courage to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And there's a group of people, millions that are living here, they work every day hard, they live in fear, they live in a shadow. Bring them out and set them on the path to citizenship. Meet with the people.
Some of the fasters, including Rudy Lopez of Chicago's Fair Immigrant Rights Movement, have vowed to continue to refuse food either until the House of Representatives holds a vote on immigration reform or until their bodies can't continue. But Lopez says he's wary of calls from many organizations and President Obama for the House to pass the immigration bill that the Senate passed this past summer, mainly because it would deploy more fencing, armed guards, and drones on the U.S.-Mexico border. Lopez said his cousin died crossing the border a few years ago after paying a coyote to take him into a less patrolled remote desert region.
Obviously, I'm concerned about the militarization of the border and also the demonization of people that I care about and where I come from. The border's never been more secure than it has now, yet there is this idea that more has to be done. Look, there's already enforcement measures in there on a border that's never been more secure.
Lopez was in the Fast for Families tent this past Friday when President Obama and Michelle Obama arrived for a surprise visit. The press pool was kept away from the tent during that meeting, but Lopez described to Feature Story News what took place.
I got a chance to share my story with him. They were very warm and compassionate to the stories they heard. They recommitted themselves to our cause. We made sure to impart upon them our gratitude for what they've done with DACA, but also asked them to do more on deportations. What he did for military families was great, being able to provide a stay there, but we want him to continue to explore the breadth of the abilities he has, and we encouraged him to do that. And he pledged to continue to follow up to explore ways in which that can happen.
DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, an executive order from President Obama that allowed undocumented youth who were brought to the country as children to apply for protection from deportation. In November, the president expanded this protection to include the undocumented families of U.S. military service members and veterans. Yet when an undocumented protester interrupted the president's speech in California last week to demand he stop deporting family members without criminal records, he said he could not do so without Congress passing a bill. In the final weeks of this year, the fasting activists and their supporters say they will continue to call both for executive actions from the president and progress on an immigration reform bill in Congress. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
The fair trade watchdog Transparency International has released its latest global survey of the world's most corrupt nations. Denmark fared the best, with Somalia ranking lowest. The USA came in at number 19. FSN's Daniel Rentschers spoke to Transparency International spokesman Ben Ellers and began by asking him which were the most corrupt countries and how they qualified for the unwanted league position.
The countries which come bottom of our list are Somalia, North Korea and Afghanistan. And these are all failed states which have enormous problems and desperately need help in all sorts of way, including to try to help them combat corruption, which isn't easy.
And some of the best performing countries?
These tend to be the Nordic countries and New Zealand. And this year, top of the list are Denmark and New Zealand.
And what are some of the countries which have declined significantly? I notice you talk about New Zealand's great transparency, but Australia's actually declined in the ratings.
Australia has declined, and this is worrying because it's traditionally been a strong performer, and it's also starting to host the G20 starting from December the 1st. It's declined. There have been a number of corruption scandals which have come out in Australia, and other countries which have done bad. Two notable ones. Syria has gone down substantially from an already low base as the country basically disintegrates and everything depends on the black market. And also, worryingly, Spain as well has gone down 6 points.
And how is the United States faring?
Well, the United States comes 19th on our list, and this should really be a cause for great concern. A country which is often held up as a model, this isn't acceptable.
There are some who say that this list does not reflect necessarily the true nature of corruption. Do you think that this is still a legitimate exercise?
It's hugely important and hugely relevant, as it really gives governments and societies and business the opportunity to reflect as to where they are. And those governments which often are most critical of the methodology, unsurprisingly, are the ones which don't do so well. But I also want to be clear that this is by no means the only tool we have to measure corruption.
Ben Ellers from Transparency International. Now, as the tech boom fuels exploding house prices in California's Silicon Valley, the working class, the disabled, and seniors find themselves priced out of the market. In San Jose, often cited as the number one most expensive market in the US, seniors who own their own mobile homes but rent the land they rest on are facing eviction. And they say the high cost of housing means there's nowhere left for them to go. Rachel Silverman has the story.
They come together once a month in the clubhouse of the mobile home park where they live to play Bunko, a game with three dice and a whole lot of luck. Mostly low income and all senior citizens, they're afraid their luck has run out.
I don't know where I'd go. I don't know what I would do. I was told that they would destroy my house.
Jean Cardiff and more than 150 other senior citizens who live here are facing eviction from the homes where they'd planned to live out their final years.
I have no idea where I would go. I don't even like to think about it.
The owners of this seniors-only mobile home park have given notice that they want to sell the land underneath these homes. With property prices booming, developers want to replace the mobile homes with market-rate condominiums. Dave Johnson is president of the Winchester Mobile Home Park Homeowners Association.
We have a lot of people in this park that if they get displaced from here who have no family and they have an income that is letting them eke by here, and if they get tossed out of this place, they have no place to go except the street, or the city's going to have to take care of them.
Johnson and the other senior residents here are getting organized, making videos, writing letters, contacting local politicians, and trying to work out a deal.
We're trying to intercede and buy the property instead of Pulte Homes, and that's going to require coming up with funding.
Board member Davelin Jones is 79 and still works part-time as a technical writer.
I helped to produce Silicon Valley. I'm one of the people that worked in it for 40 years, and I want to retire here.
Kent and Ruth Greathouse, 75 and 69, were public school teachers.
If this group of homes is destroyed, it's not just individual lives, but they are actually destroying an entire community here.
The older people, the low-wage earners, the families who are struggling, they get lost.
The Greathouses and a handful of other residents recently attended a city council meeting where they waited 3 hours and were given 1 minute to speak. San Jose Housing Director Leslie Corsiglia also attended the meeting. She says if the sale goes through, it will exacerbate the city's already chronic shortage of affordable housing.
We're going to have more and more seniors that we need to house, and more seniors living longer and on fixed incomes. So the problem is going to get greater. We need more state leadership. We need more federal leadership. Right now, local governments are left to handle this themselves and without the tools that are needed to do this.
A lawyer for the park owners says by law, residents would have to be paid fair market value for their homes and given 2 years rent support. Some properties may be able to be moved elsewhere, though space is limited. This senior citizens mobile home park is just one of a dozen in the city of San Jose alone. Several similar parks in nearby cities have already been sold to developers. As the tech boom drives up land values and America's aging population explodes, seniors on fixed incomes are looking at increasingly uncertain futures. Rachel Silverman, San Jose, California.
police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah, fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition.
Junior Mervyn's hit single Police and Thieves. Jamaican singer Mervyn passed away yesterday in Port Antonio, aged 67. Police and Thieves was his defining record and saw his reputation spread from Jamaica to UK chart success. Editor of the Jamaican Observer, Howard Campbell, told me about the time he met Junior Mervyn.
Well, the thing about it is that I interviewed him in 2000. And he told me that, you know, because there was a lot of friction in Jamaica at the time, you know, around 75, 76 with the politics. You know, with the whole Manley and Seaga thing, you know, the whole Cold War situation in Jamaica. There's a lot of gang violence, political violence in the mid-70s. So I thought it was that, you know, there's a lot of fighting with the police and these gangs. And I thought the song was inspired by that. But he said no, you know. He said it was just a song that came to him. But I don't know if he was being politically correct at the time. You know, because a lot of these singers don't like to ruffle feathers. But he says that's not what inspired it. But it caught on in England, you know, because there was a lot of strife there in the black community with the police as well.
That's right. It became the soundtrack to the violence, the year of its release. It became the soundtrack to the violence experienced at the Notting Hill Carnival.
Right. So, you know, it really caught on in England. But it was recorded for somebody who, you know about Scratch Perry. You know, he's very eccentric, always willing to try new things. He was pretty edgy at the time. And I think if you listen to some of the earlier stuff that Junior Mervyn did, it wasn't political or controversial. It was, you know, more like, you know, Lovers Rock, you know, more balladier type of stuff. So, you know, Police and Thieves was a kind of a departure, even though the song didn't have that rebellious tone like a Burnt Spear or a Mali or a Culture or things like that. It was pretty, you know, easy on the ears. It could be played on radio without offending anybody, you know. Yeah. And it came at a time when, you know, the reggae scene in England was quite vibrant, you know, with first generation blacks, sure, but as well as the punk movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the Clash took it on as well, didn't they?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. I read a book about, it's a biography by David Katz about Scratch Perry. And they said when he first met the Clash here in Jamaica, he said, you know, something like, so you are the people who mess up my song.
Right,
you know,
okay.
He wasn't a fan of the Clash version. I believe the Boy George version was much better, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as edgy as the Clash is.
So where then does, in your opinion, where does Junior Mervyn sit in the sort of the reggae, the rock steady hall of fame?
Well, I wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he had a significant hit, you know. But if you look at it in Jamaican terms, he had only two hit songs.
Howard Campbell, remembering Junior Mervyn. And that's the Tuesday edition of FSN Reports. You can always contact us via email. We're there, reports@featurestory.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're there @featurestory. Coming up on Wednesday, the Oakland basketball team shooting for a Chinese fan base. That's Wednesday. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the bulletin desk. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Here's Junior Mervyn to play us out. Police and police.